Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 20th December, 2017. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa vows to open the country to investors.
My government is committed to open Zimbabwe up to investment by building a free and transparent economy which benefits Zimbabweans and is welcoming to outsiders.
Ugandan lawmakers vote to remove presidential age limits to allow President Yoweri Museveni to run again. But on the streets of Kampala, ordinary citizens were not happy.
It's a very big disappointment that Parliament has taken this lane. There's too much hype that it had that so many legislators were saying we won't vote in favor. I'm very disappointed.
The Kenyans have transitioned to democracy. It's the Ugandans who are lagging behind just for some little money.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you.
But first, let's listen to what has been happening around the world.
I am Kai Dambach with the DW News. Uganda's parliament passed a bill to scrap the current constitutional rule that presidential candidates must be under 75. This would allow current president Yoweri Museveni, who is 73, to run for president again. Museveni has held the position for more than 30 years. The debate was marred by violence on the floor, which required police and soldiers to enter the chamber to break up the melee. The European Commission took a tough stance on member state Poland for breaching the rule of law.
It is with a heavy heart that we have decided to initiate Article 7.1. But the facts leave us no choice. I stood before you in July when I clearly said that we'd almost reached the situation where we would need to invoke Article 7.1. The situation since then has not improved, but deteriorated, so we have no other option.
This is the first time the Commission has ever invoked the article. Brussels was concerned the Polish government was passing measures that the EU considered threats against the rule of law. Poland may see its voting rights in the Commission removed and sanctions may be placed on the country. The Polish Prime Minister denounced the Commission's decision. The new president of Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa, delivered his first State of the Union address. He promised a zero-tolerance policy against corruption and to open the country up to investors. Mnangagwa took control of the Southern African nation after Robert Mugabe was forced to resign following a military coup in November. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The United States Senate passed a massive overhaul to the country's tax code. Republicans backed the code, saying the new rules will reduce the corporate income tax rate and cut taxes for residents. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell welcomed the passage.
Worth noticing, we've had two quarters in a row of 3% growth. Stock market is up. Optimism is high. Coupled with this tax reform, America is ready to start performing as it should have for a number of years.
Democrats were unhappy with the tax code, saying it would benefit big businesses more than residents. Should the House of Representatives pass the new code reform, it would be the farthest sweeping tax makeover passed by Congress in three decades. Angola's state oil company, Sonangol, is looking into a potential inappropriate distribution of funds. The investigation will look at former chief executive Isabel dos Santos, daughter of former Angolan president José Eduardo dos Santos. Angolan news sources have accused Isabel, Africa's richest woman, of being behind suspicious transfers and payments worth tens of millions of dollars. She has denied any wrongdoing. And last night was great for teams in blue in the German Cup. Both Schalke and Paderborn made it to the quarterfinals with 1-0 wins. Mainz punched its ticket to the next round as well as Wolfsburg, which needed extra time against Nuremberg. Tonight's action features defending cup champions Borussia Dortmund going up against record title holder Bayern Munich. Mönchengladbach takes on Leverkusen, Bremen versus Freiburg, and Heidenheim hosts Eintracht Frankfurt. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dambach.
Welcome back once again to the program with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Now, Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has vowed to ensure the rule of law, fight corruption, enact laws that attract investors and ensure free and fair elections next year.
But as DW's Columbus Mavunga reports, the opposition says there is no sincerity in the country's new president and his government.
In his first State of the Nation address, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said his government was most concerned about addressing Zimbabwe's battered economy. He said he was looking forward to the West warming up to Zimbabwe's new government.
My government is committed to open Zimbabwe up to investment by building a free and transparent economy which benefits Zimbabweans and is welcoming to outsiders.
Relations between Zimbabwe and the West were strained in 2002 following reports of human rights abuses and election rigging under Robert Mugabe's rule. Investors have been shunning Zimbabwe, citing its unfriendly laws, including the indigenization law, which gives locals a majority stake in all foreign-owned companies. Mnangagwa's government wants to amend the law. On Wednesday, President Mnangagwa also vowed to ensure the rule of law, fight corruption, and organize free and fair elections. But Nelson Chamisa, the vice president of the Movement for Democratic Change, the country's main opposition party, says the new government has nothing to offer to Zimbabweans.
Building our country is not going to take the mindset of the old, which is the mindset Mr. Mnangagwa seeks to be perpetuating. So what we are seeing in government is a new face with the old mind. What we are seeing in government is just a new haircut, but the same old systems and the same old head. And this must change.
The opposition says it has already started asking the international community to inject funds into Zimbabwe once elections are held.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare.
And now when I look at our social media platforms, Evan Mawarire tweeted, "A president's State of the Nation address had everything we wanted to hear, but he goes ahead saying nothing else will transform Zimbabwe. Expect a genuine commitment to values of honesty, transparency, accountability, tolerance and hard work that we have gathered, or that have gathered cobwebs over the years. Hashtag this flag."
And that is his movement, Jane. Twivuze says leaders of the people at heart are willing to honestly serve the needs and interests of the people, not their own. Walk the talk for the country's good. And at this moment, we'd like to welcome our listeners who are following us live on Facebook. Keep those comments flowing and we'll read them whenever we can, live here on air.
Moving on, after months of tension between Warsaw and Brussels, the EU has now started a process that could strip Poland of its voting rights in the bloc. The move comes after Poland's parliament last week adopted new reforms allowing it to effectively choose members of the country's Supreme Court. European Commission Deputy Head Frans Timmermans made that announcement in Brussels a short while ago. Let's listen in and then follow up on an interview that our colleague in Berlin, Sumi Somaskanda, had with DW's Terry Schultz in Brussels.
It is with a heavy heart that we have decided to initiate Article 7.1. But the facts leave us no choice. I stood before you in July when I clearly said that we'd almost reached a situation where we would need to invoke Article 7.1. The situation since then has not improved but deteriorated, so we have no other option.
So no other option. Let's bring in our Brussels correspondent, Terry Schultz. Terry, remind us, why exactly is the EU considering sanctions here?
Well, Sumi, as you heard, Vice President Frans Timmermans is clearly exasperated. It's been him personally who had to negotiate with the Polish government over these last 2 years, trying to bring them back into compliance with EU law in terms of freedom of the judiciary. And Poland has basically ignored every recommendation the commission has made. And so, as Timmermans said, they are left no choice. They have to go to the back of the tool shed and bring out their most powerful weapon to suspend, possibly, Poland's voting rights, to possibly cost it money. And with Poland being the biggest net beneficiary of EU funds, they're hoping that this time Warsaw will listen.
Article 7 has never been applied up until now. Will we really see Brussels sanction Poland?
Well, as we also heard, those sanctions can be tough, but they will require the agreement from 27 other governments. All the governments except Poland would have to agree to suspend its voting rights. And already the Hungarian government has promised Warsaw it won't let that happen. So we already know that in the end, the Hungarian government will block this most severe circumstances from coming to pass. But the commission is hoping that the threats, the possible, you know, bad image that Poland will be getting simply by going through these procedures may bring it back into compliance, and they've given the Polish government 3 months to reconsider its decisions.
Terry Schultz in Brussels speaking to DW's Sumi Somaskanda.
Now, an early Christmas gift for Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni after members of parliament voted to remove the presidential age limit of 75 years from the constitution. This means that Museveni can run again for office in 2021 when he will be 76 years old. From Kampala, Alex Gita sent this report.
434 MPs were expected to vote in the controversial deliberation. NRM needed 289 votes to get their wish. In the end, 317 voted for the amendment and 95 against. Now the president, Yoweri Museveni, will sign off the bill and it will then become law. But off the streets of Kampala, people were disappointed and spoke to DW.
It's a very big disappointment that Parliament has taken this lane. This is not the voice of Ugandans. Ugandans totally differed from this.
The Kenyans have transitioned to democracy. It's the Ugandans who are lagging behind just for some little money. Mm. They've sealed our fate. That is it for Uganda. No, Museveni is a good president, but democracy will prevail way beyond Mr. Museveni. He knows this, and the parliamentarians know this. But there's nothing we can do about it.
I don't understand why people are making noise and shouting. They know democracy is about numbers. The opposition has been saying that they have support. Now the issue has taken to the vote. The NRM has won. Of course, that's the power of the majority. Well, let them respect the outcome. Let them go back and organize themselves, address the problems they have internally. Maybe they'll be able to have other numbers to influence other things in parliament to come. But for now, our NRM has won.
However, some MPs of the ruling NRM party voted against the bill, including Patrick Nsamba Oshabe. The media is not allowed to record proceedings from the parliamentary chambers.
I don't subscribe to the view that my party, NRM, is under-resourced in terms of leaders. There is a lie that there is no other person within the party that can take the country forward.
Some MPs, especially from northern Uganda, threatened to break away from Uganda if their age limit is lifted. Here are MPs Julius Ochen and Regan Okum, both from northern Uganda.
The people are going to start pushing for seceding from this country. We cannot take this country called Uganda. And if you go ahead to amend this constitution today, this country will go to another stage that we all live to regret.
We can't accept. You have sat on us enough. We have had our own voting pattern. We shall decide our destiny. We shall exit from this country. We are big enough. We are big enough.
Alexita compiled that report. And Jane, many comments on this story. It looks like it's a done deal from Seven.
Absolutely.
Thanks to the members of parliament from his party. Enjome says, all these dictators are heavily protected by the West. Our opinions don't count anymore.
A strong one there. And Kayetembe Sab says, just greed of all African so-called leaders. 31 years in power and still wants to stay on.
Yakub Nasir in Nigeria says, we are in Africa, we've had much more than this. Similar things happened to Nigerian lawmakers over signing against Ebele Jonah. He means the former president, Jonathan Goodluck. When will we determine our future, he asks.
And Kintu Felix Musoke says, politics in Uganda is now an economic business. MP go to parliament to earn a living. That is why they want to increase the term from 5 years to 7 years.
Our usual contributor, Charles Ongole, says this is Museveni's style of governance, using violence to harm, intimidate, and coerce those of dissenting opinions and policies.
And lastly, we have this one from Gambia, and Killer Eye says that there should be term limits because when the president gets too old, he can't control anything in the government.
Keep them flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we'll be back.
Well, this is a DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will hear why many Kenyans are now turning to witchcraft in search for wealth, happiness, and even success at work.
I work for the supermarket chain Nakumat. Business was getting worse and worse across Kenya, and we didn't have enough customers. So my bosses asked me to go to Baba Nyuki to boost our business.
Well, on that story, Jane, Engineer Solomon Ologe says on her Facebook page, that is the Kenyan culture.
No, it can't be.
Yeah, and Kalenzi says it's an evil practice.
Let's leave it at that and move on to this story. We'll come to that much, much later. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has said his organization needs more funding from donors to take care of Somali refugees currently living in refugee camps in Kenya. The world must do more to help millions of refugees across sub-Saharan Africa, which hosts more than a quarter of the world's refugees. Grandi was speaking at a press briefing in Nairobi after assessing the situation of refugees in Kenya, Somalia, and Djibouti. From Nairobi, DW's correspondent Andrew Asike sent this report.
After days of interacting with refugees from Somalia, Kenya, and Djibouti, the United Nations High Commissioner and Canadian Minister of Immigration has told journalists in Nairobi that the refugee crisis in the Horn of Africa still remains one of the most protracted refugee crises in the world after the Palestinian and Afghanistan's. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, says that despite the volatile situation in Somalia, the refugees he spoke to insisted that they want to go back home.
What I observed in all countries is that all of the refugees I spoke to, at least in Djibouti and in Kenya, Ethiopia and other countries as well, say that they want eventually to go back home. Somalia is their country. Their attitude to return is a prudent one. They know that Somalia continues to be fragile in terms of security, infrastructure, institutions, and they factor all this in their decision-making.
Grandi said that around 35,000 Somali refugees willingly went back to their home country in 2017. He says that the number could have been higher but was slowed down by weather conditions and security concerns as most refugees fly back home. The UN hopes to resume road transport once they are sure of the security situation.
And I was in Kismayo 3 days ago, and I visited some of the areas where people go back to. And most of the people I talked to that had returned were happy to have done so, although very clear-minded on the challenges. Others are less happy.
Grandi appealed to the international community for more humanitarian assistance for the Somali living in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp, the largest in the world, and those scattered across the Horn of Africa region.
And I want to make a strong appeal here for more humanitarian assistance to be put into Dadaab in particular. Yesterday, what we saw were difficult conditions. Scarcity of food, and food is vital, so are health programs and sanitation and shelter programs. All this is still very much needed. Efforts of the international community should be really focusing very much on Somalia so as to rebuild the country and, among other things, create conditions for refugees to be able to go back.
Canadian Minister Hussein also gave an overview of the refugee situation in the region and announced $25 million US dollars new funding from his country, Canada, to support refugees in Kenya and Somalia. He said that he had visited Somalia and Kenya's Dadaab camp and found rations had been reduced drastically due to poor funding.
Canada has provided $4 million to the World Food Programme in order to provide emergency food assistance to 500,000 refugees in Kenya, as well as 3 million Kenyan citizens who are facing food insecurity. We announced an additional $10.4 million in humanitarian assistance to vulnerable communities in Somalia. This is going to provide water, food, medicine, and child protection services to the Somali people.
The Canadian minister added that his country will provide an additional $6 million over the next 2 years to World Food Programme, WFP, to help vulnerable populations in Kenya recover from the ongoing drought.
Andrew Wasike reporting from Nairobi, Kenya.
On the spot.
Let's remain a little bit in Kenya, where the majority of the population is Christian and witchcraft is regarded as a satanic remnant of traditional religions. Nevertheless, many Kenyans still believe in the power of the so-called witch doctors. They don't just provide traditional remedies, they also make a range of promises from revenge for adultery to success at work and wealth, and even election victories for candidates who are trailing behind. This report by Linda Staude is now presented by Anne-Sophie Brendlin.
The belief in witches, demons and voodoo is widespread in Kenya. Villager Danstona Adalberi is sure it works.
There is witchcraft. We should just take it for granted. It's there.
Even though many in Kenya still believe in witchcraft, Danstona Adalberi is one of the few to openly discuss his faith. Especially in Nairobi, people prefer to present themselves as sophisticated critical thinkers who are beyond the old traditions. Amkili Baminga, for instance, says he doesn't believe in witch doctors, even though many people he knows consult them.
I have had many going to the witch doctor, but to me I don't believe.
For Amkili Baminga, witch doctors are just trying to rip people off and make money.
Maybe you have a problem, your hand has a problem. When you go to the witch doctor, he makes your hand to be well. And after a while, you hear that there is a problem in the race, so that you can keep on going. You see, this business for them to get money.
The waiting room in a small house in Nakuru is packed. Young couples with small children, older ladies and well-dressed men are all sitting on colorfully patterned sofas until Annette Mutoi has time for them.
I have inherited my powers from my grandmother. We have spirits that have the power to show us the right medicine.
She's not just referring to herbal medicine. Annette Mutoi has also created a magic charm for unfaithful husbands.
That's the magic charm. We put a piece of paper with the name of the cheating husband in the wooden charm, then we close it and keep it close to the bottle. It will send us an alarm as soon as the husband has an affair again.
If that happens, the cheating husband will be hit by a curse, and the consequences can be quite embarrassing. Reports like that have even caused well-known companies to call on witch doctors for help when they're struggling financially.
I work for the supermarket chain Nakumat. Business was getting worse and worse across Kenya, and we didn't have enough customers. So my bosses asked me to go to Baba Nyuki to boost our business, and now we have a lot of customers again.
That's Linda Apiu. She's gathered an ash-like substance that the witch doctor gave her in front of the entrance of the supermarket. The witch doctor, Baba Nyoki, which means father of the bees, explains that this kind of medicine also works for politicians who want to get more votes.
I have the power to make people fall in love with you. If a candidate comes to me, I give him medicine that he either takes a bath in or swallows before he talks to people. When he does that, he will definitely get the seat in parliament he wants to have.
In Kenya, where the majority of population is made up of devout Christians, voodoo is regarded as the devil's work, says Amkili Bamingwa.
These witch doctors, they use satanic powers because demons are real. You see, those satanic powers, they are there and they are real. Even the Bible says they are satanic powers that do miracles.
Well, that report was filed by Linda Staude and presented by Anne-Sophie Brendlin. So, Jen, let's take on these comments head on about witchcraft in Kenya. There's a whole mix. And please, you will start.
When I look at our Facebook page, Hamza Omar, a.k.a. The Unshakable from Nigeria, says witchcraft still exists in Nigeria and Africa as a whole, but can only have influence on those who are not believers. A God-fearing community drives witchcraft away.
Well, Chibuike Kelvin Ugore says everyone is entitled to his or her belief. All humans worship a form of deity or the other before the advent of wild popular religions. However, with conversion and spiritual or mental illumination, such can be converted to another form of worship.
Ebenezer Taki says that there is nothing good about witchcraft.
Askia Ture says it's real in a way. It depends on how you use it.
What does it mean? What does he mean?
The good, the bad, I don't know. Maybe the ugly side of it. And Aliyah says, you can say anything about it. God himself said he can forgive any kind of sin. So believe in him alone.
So keep those comments coming. You know, Isaac, in Kenya, mm-hmm. witchcraft is usually known as kamote.
And, oh, I had that in the report and I had, you know, the calabash is shaking.
Absolutely.
I mean, it sounded a little bit frightening. Anyway, we'll be back right after this.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, new research suggests that vegetation plays a critical role in the frequency and intensity of rainfall. That's according to experts meeting here in Bonn, Germany for the Global Landscape Forum. But the lucrative business of trading charcoal has led to the destruction of forests and vegetation. It's against that background that the National Council of Environment in Nigeria has banned charcoal exports and proposed a move towards alternative clean sources of energy. From River State's Bello Mohammed sent this report.
Charcoal is an age-old source of energy, but many people both in rural and urban areas of Nigeria still rely heavily on coal for everything, from cooking or roasting to blacksmithing and bronze casting. Rachel John uses charcoal to roast plantain and fish to sell on the streets of Port Harcourt.
I am a buyer. We buy one tin for 200 naira. I buy 5 tins a day. The smoke of the charcoal bothers my eyes, but because we want to survive, we do the business. The bush does not finish, so as they cut trees, many more will grow.
I'm Rachel.
But charcoal is not as abundant as many think. Like many countries, Nigeria is affected by deforestation, especially as precious hardwoods are often cut down. According to studies, the country's current forest cover is less than 4%. Ibaredo Kentebe of Environmental Rights Action, Friends of the Earth, explains the negative effects of cutting down trees.
We know that using charcoal is a
We know that using charcoal as fuel, as well as using fuel wood, means cutting down trees. We're not advocating for that. Already, there are cook stoves that are being introduced by different organizations that reduce the increase in the use of fuel wood. What we are saying most importantly is that we do not encourage the cutting down of trees because it is a form of cover for the earth.
Cover for the earth.
Nevertheless, charcoal is big business for many people here. It is even exported, and Nigeria has a large market in the Europe, United States of America, and Asia. Prices range from $170 to $300 per ton. At a wood depot on the riverside, I meet Damingo Philip. He's a local producer and seller of the wood used for making charcoal.
It takes a 3 to 4 day journey before you come back with loads of woods. We supply to individuals, to bakeries, and many major traders come with trucks to buy from us.
Cutting wood is a tough job. Nenge Thangod Ega of the Belema Polo community in River State lives nearby and knows how difficult the lives of the woodcutters can be.
The majority that cut these woods are Ijaw and Akwa Ibom boys. They cut these woods and then they bring it. Sometimes they stay in that bush for 1 month, sometimes 3 weeks. They will be cutting and saving. When they have gathered enough, they start coming back. Some of them that run out of luck even died in that process.
Over two-thirds of charcoal production today takes place in Africa. Many protected trees are also cut down illegally. Nigeria's National Council on Environment recently decided that the export of charcoal should be banned to save the country's current forest cover.
Mohammed Bello there reporting from Two River State in Nigeria.
Well, alternative clean sources of energy, I think, Jane, are a better option than charcoal. Godwin John says people in Nigeria will not stop using charcoal and firewood in the next 30 years, especially in the rural areas. No electricity. Price of cooking gas is beyond the reach of average Nigerians. Kerosene is sold at between 250 naira and 350 per litre, where the minimum wage is only 18,000 per month. Many thanks, Godwin, for that insightful comment. And also would like to thank those who have been following us on Facebook Live and your comments. We appreciate. And on behalf of the production crew behind the scenes, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyenge. Thank you so much for your time.